that leaders must be tough enough to fight, tender enough to cry, human enough to make mistakes, humble enough to admit them, strong enough to absorb the pain, and resilient enough to bounce back and keep on moving.
Salutations, dear citizens, as we peer into the new fund order to discover the immutable truth for asset management and wealth managers. The lowdown from the dark side, the frontier and the fringe of asset management and fund research.
The pain is often intense, but you must smile through your tears and keep moving with the faith that there's a brighter side somewhere.
A podcast for wealth managers, fund selectors, distributors and investors, bringing to you the People's Republic Podcast of Finance in association with my sponsor, Allianz Global Investors, capturing the latest market news, views and interviews with leading minds in our industry.
At a time like this, you are forced to deal with your irreducible essence, forced to grapple with that which is really important to you. What I've concluded about life, Hubert Humphrey said, when all is said and done, we must forgive each other and redeem each other and move on.
Allianz Global Investors is one of the world's leading active managers. And in these strange pandemic lockdown times, rest assured that all guests are calling in remotely. And welcome to the new fund order, Justin. Look, hey, as a multi-asset fund allocator and one of the few black fund managers in the city, you have risen to become a leading voice in the ethnic diversity and social mobility within our industry. Nice to have you on board.
Thank you. Delighted to be on.
Much of the subject matter we're going to talk today is it can be quite politically charged, but obviously we're trying to, give our listeners some sort of meaningful help, how it affects their lives, how it affects their working lives, I guess how it affects fund selectors, right? You know, making decisions, you know, how are they? Are they part of the problem? Are they part of the solution? You know, some things just happen without, you know, even thinking about it. And I think maybe what we'll try to do today is try and bring that to the fore for them. So let me throw you into the first one. As I said, as that leading voice in the Talk About Black and, of course, the I Am campaigns, how have those conversations been developing? And are you optimistic or disheartened with the progress so far?
Yeah, thanks, JB. So if I look back at last year in particular, I'd never say that I was a leading voice. I'd say I'm a voice, and we did have you know, significant traction last year though, in terms of being listened to and being heard. But I just want to just really stress that 2020 and a little bit into 2021, more recently in 2021. It's just been, it's extremely difficult to keep on verbalizing, keep on really banging the drum and talking about diversity overall, particularly in relation to ethnicity, because it hits so hard and it's something that, you know, clearly has affected me since I was born. So it's actually just extremely difficult to do so. So I praise and welcome any kind of champions and allies that continue to beat the drum here, and you're one of them. So thank you for that. But as I say, there's a lot of vulnerability in there, and throughout 2020 was just actually a really difficult year in terms of, for many people, in terms of banging that drum and verbalising their personal experience. But when I look at businesses, I think that we've moved on in a positive way, in that the conversations have been successful. You know, I, as well as many other people, have been into major asset managers, spoken to boards. The reaction has always been positive. But I think now the conversations need to end and the actions really need to start. And I think that's what's been lacking. And if I look over the last 12, 18 months and I think about the challenges, I think they can be summarized in a few points. So firstly, I think what something like the Diversity Project does, it brings people, it brings businesses together. But I think businesses overall are still trying to implement this in isolation. And when it comes to ethnic diversity is such a societal issue.
Right.
That I think businesses, they can't individually try and implement this. They have to club together. The kinks in the hose pipe that I've spoken about so many times that stops talent from flowing through. Actually, one business cannot unkink the kink themselves. That they need to work together. The second point, I think asset owners, fund researchers, the regulator, the people that can really influence and move the dial, hadn't really prioritised this until more recently with the latest research discussion document from the FCA, the Bank of England, the PRA, and then the asset owner charter that we've seen more recently from the on the institutional side, where asset owners and consultants have come together to put together a charter around diversity, which includes ethnicity. And the final point, I think this is so fundamental to all of the discussions on ethnic diversity, is that people so far have thought the solution is, let's just sort out the graduate or the junior rung, because it's so easy to do that. And if we do that, then all of a sudden everything else will miraculously change, and so on and so forth. But actually, all the work that we're doing now says that actually at entry level, the diversity initiatives, we're at saturation point. And that doesn't mean that we need to stop, right? But there's lots and lots of initiatives, 100 black interns, the skills workshop, Upreach, rare recruitment focus at the junior level. But actually, it's when you drop this diverse talent, not only ethnic talent, when you drop them into businesses, we're finding that the cultures are not inclusive enough in order to progress people throughout businesses. So what you have is then talented people dropping out of the workforce at mid-level. So until businesses really focus on their culture and making them more inclusive, then you're never really going to see senior black ethnic minority talent rise through these businesses.
It's that I want to get into this idea, I guess, of institutionalized structures, right, and how that has an effect on it. But before we get to that, this idea where you say that we have graduates and interns, and then they come into the organization, there's a lack of cultural fit. They basically run out of roads. They can't then, as you say, progress up. Is that, you know, we talk about glass ceilings, right? We always talk about glass ceilings, particularly, you know, on the gender side. I was talking with Bev, but is there a committee ceiling? Is some of that cultural misalignment happening at committees? Is it when they're coming up to present a paper, they're facing frankly a sea of white, and is there a bad reaction there, or is it closer to home? Is it immediate line management? Where do you think it's breaking down?
I think it's breaking down at lots and lots of different points. And I'll just give you a few examples. So I run, after spotting this challenge, I run mentoring circles. They're called the N Circle Mentoring Circles. And really they are for people of 0 to 10 years experience to help them navigate the corporate environment. So we've spoken to them about the mentees, about things like negotiating pay, how to deal with mid-year reviews, how to deal with feedback, how to think about their personal brand, how to think about imposter syndrome, how to articulate themselves in presentations. But I think fundamentally what it comes down to is, when you join any workforce, you want to feel like you belong. But the more different you are from that workforce, almost the greater the adaption or the fitting in that you need to do. and therefore the further away from your authentic self that you become. And that is, it just creates a huge challenge to that individual, a huge mental stress to that individual. So what the good businesses are doing is that they're recognizing this and they're saying, well, actually our policies, our policies, our environment, our line managers need to be more inclusive. So actually it's not about the individual adapting, it's about us as a business adapting to the individuals that we have. A great example is, I know a senior person in the industry who, you know, is a senior black leader at a business and is trying to progress to the upper echelons. And he's been recommended from his business to see a coach. But clearly, given that he's got this burden of being a leader in trying to deliver racial equity across the industry and the corporate sphere, the kind of coach that person needs is somebody with experience in, or that at least understands ethnicity and understands the situation that he's in. But when you're recommended a suite of coaches and they're all white males, and none of them, actually some females as well, actually some women as well, but all kind of all non-ethnic minorities, and none of them say they are, that they've got experience in dealing with racial equity and thinking about, you know, as an ethnic minority, how you can progress. That's a huge barrier. It's a huge barrier. You need to try and then pick that experience up from elsewhere. So that's just one example, even at senior level, how you know, having that challenge of nobody to speak to kind of help you navigate your own career is a huge challenge. And actually, that's one big advantage of being part of Talk About Black, one big advantage of being part of the Diversity Project, is that all of a sudden, I have people of very similar experience to me that I can lean on when having those, you know, difficult career moments, when we're hiring people, when we're thinking about, the overall inclusive culture of the business that I'm in, I can lean on these senior black peers and ethnic minority peers and get their opinion. And that's vitally important.
And we hear about institutional racism, whether it's in politics or in the police force. And I think the city too has been forced to face its own colonial origins. It has faced many protests in the past. You recall back those anti-capitalist riots where everyone locked themselves into their offices, you know, and they kind of tore through Bishopsgate. But also the Extinction Religion. Is the city now facing up to its role? Is it listening? Can it reconcile its origins, perhaps with a greater sense of social purpose?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. I think let's tackle institutional racism first. The recent report into racial and ethnic disparities by Dr. Tony Sewell, I think you know, that's debated institutional racism a lot, and it's caused a lot of division with a lot of people. I can only talk about my experience, and my experience as an ethnic minority in the UK doesn't marry with the experience that was portrayed in that report, and doesn't marry with my family's experience or my friends' experience. There are structural barriers that I believe has stopped a number of people that I know and very close to progressing as much as they could have done. I think what's the most upsetting thing about that report, though, was just the tone it was written.
Right.
And I think that's caused a lot of the debate. And actually, the other thing is it stops, I think, the debating has really meant that the actions that were starting to be taken in workplaces and society of the removal of these structural barriers, and some of them have been thrown up in the air. And I think that, to me, is really disappointing. But when you start to look at the city, you know, the city is clearly embracing ESG. If I look at the fund managers, asset managers, I don't know any asset manager that doesn't have an ESG range or ESG running through their DNA and so on and so forth.
We say that with a pinch of salt, right?
Yes, exactly. the focus has been on the E, right? So it's been on the kind of the majority of the focus has been on climate change.
Right.
I do think that the focus is moving on to the S. And I think when the focus does start to move on to the S, diversity and inclusion is clearly a key part of that. And I think a lot of these asset managers are going to have to start to look inwards. But ultimately, as custodians of clients' capital, there's a responsibility of asset managers to, you know, have a social conscience. When it comes to the city and colonialism, I think it's very difficult to highlight and point at the city. I think, you know, if you look at our country, our nation, the UK, it's very difficult not to argue that the economic position of the UK over, you know, the last hundreds of years hasn't been built on, you know, slavery, colonialism, the Windrush generation, immigration, and all of those clearly have led to where we are today in terms of ethnic diversity. So it's very hard to detangle the city from the UK in a way. But I'd say as a fund selector, I think that, that we can definitely do something. What the asset owners have done with their charter, I think we can do something like that in the retail space. So I think, you know, one of the things that I'm working on is working with different fund selectors to try and put together a charter to really say, this is what we stand for when we research managers. And I think that will make a huge difference on the retail side as the asset owners and the investment consultants aim to make on the institutional side.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously, over the last couple of years, we've seen some advancements on the gender agenda along those. I'm thinking here, Lupa's team over at Towers, they've brought in a lot for that as well. But it feels like we're still at least 2 to 3 steps behind that in terms of ethnicity. And if I think through my career, you know, through the mists of time here, Justin, and I think back, I reckon it's probably less than 1% of, you know, seeing black fund managers, actually even come across black fund managers, you know, be it at conferences, at workshops, even on-site visits going into specific fund managers and saying, let me meet your fund managers, that creates a bit of a circular loop. You know, by not exposing fund selectors, it becomes quite difficult. How do we fix that balance? How do we get more people from ethnic backgrounds wanting to join this industry right from the get-go? You know, coming into our industry, don't go to tech, don't go to retail, don't go to automotive, but come to finance. How do we make that an attractive place to come to?
So I don't think that that if we, you know, if we're simply out there and we're talking to students, we're talking to kids, I actually think that that's enough. I actually think there are lots of black and ethnic minority talent that would love to join the asset management industry. You know, I get bombarded on almost a daily basis of people who, you know, want to be investors. I think that I also actually think there's enough people within the asset management industry and partners to create enough talent that could sit on investment teams. But in 2017, just to kind of stress how bad this is, In 2017, before any light was shone on this, the first light that was shone on it, Financial News, and then the later report by New Financial kind of came up with a very similar number. In terms of black fund managers in institutional fund management houses, you're talking, 12 black fund managers in 2017. You know, that's all they could find. It's frightening. We cannot argue that is down to the asset management industry not being attractive enough. That there's fundamentally a lot more issues that are driving that. And you know what's really interesting? When we sat down with those black fund managers, not very difficult to do when there's only 12, and you speak to the people around the table, and I think out of the 12, three of them were UK born. So, you know, fundamentally, that there is a serious issue. And then a lot of them were fund managers before they came into the UK. So, yeah, I just really struggle that this is all about attraction. I think, you know, fundamentally, we're not promoting the best talent, or we're not promoting talent fairly within our organisations. And also, I think a lot of people are applying, and just as you've mentioned in your example, and just getting turned away. I know so many people are black investment professionals that have just packed it in and said, "This after 12, you know, 7 to 12 years, that's enough for them because they're not going anywhere. So they need to go find a different career."
Yeah, and it's absolutely shocking. And I think, you know, when I'm kind of thinking about the ex Credit Suisse CIO, is it Tidjane Thiam?
And the way
he was treated showed that anything that goes wrong is somehow linked back to his race, which is not something you levy at any other fund manager. And I think for fund selectors, just not having exposure, I think we're unwittingly part of the problem. But I'm not sure what the call to action is to fund selectors, other than saying change your due diligence to ask the questions, right?
Yeah, I think that's it. I think as a fund selector, what we can do is just shine the light and just say, manager, we want to know what the breakdown is of your workforce, of your investment teams. Forget the workforce, the investment teams. Of women, ethnic minorities, and just ask them to respond, because I tell you what, the more and more you ask managers, and the more and more that they're publishing numbers which they're embarrassed of, you'll start to see a change very quickly.
Yeah, and just to finish, I've got my little rapid fire round, which I'll have to ask you as well, I'm afraid, Justin. But before we get to that, I guess I know another area more broad to the just the, I guess, the ethnic question is one of broader social mobility. What can we do as an industry, and within that, fund selectors are part of that industry, what can we do collectively to improve social mobility, be it whether it's educational background, socioeconomic background? What can we do to actually create a more representative and, I guess, a fairer industry, a fairer system that allows better social mobility?
Yeah, so I think from a social mobility perspective, you know, clearly this is one aspect of diversity and inclusion which probably hasn't had as much of the limelight as others, and it's why I'm kind of really proud to be part of the City of London Social Mobility Task Force, the Advisory Task Force, because I do think it is really important, and you've seen more recently the reports about working class white boys severely underachieving from an educational perspective. I think, you know, this is something that we do need to look at, and we do need to have a focus. I think overall, what the asset management industry, or a number of things the asset management industry could do, but one thing I think they need to do is really focus on where they find talent and where they engage with that talent. And a good way to think about it, and I'll take my football team, Manchester United, why not? I've always got to get them in somehow. And I think about when they recruit youth players, the youth players don't actually break into the first team until, 17, 18? Sometimes even later.
Yeah.
But they're out casting the net at kind of like, 7, 8, 9. You know, that's when they get the Rashfords, that's when they get the Mason Greenwoods, and they nurture them. They nurture them over the years because they know that that's the way you get the best talent in the world. And I think that asset managers probably also, in fact, if all of our big companies, if they claim to be the creme de la creme, one of the strongest companies in the world globally, then actually they have to cast the net out a lot earlier. They need to be thinking about identifying talent earlier and not just relying on them coming through the system and being this perfect model colleague that's ready to slot into our organisations immediately. So I think it's going beyond universities, going to school, it's teaching them about asset management, teaching people how to manage their money, teaching them the softer skills, because our industry has the resource to do that. So I think it's going beyond the kind of waiting for Russell Group universities to students to come with their CVs and actually casting the net a bit wider.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right. I think it's got to start pretty early on in the education system. And then it just felt like the industry needs a proper look at itself and a proper shake-up when it comes to internships. And rather seeing internships as privilege for privileged candidates. And I know some great interns come through that system, and it's not their fault. It's the infrastructure. It is the institution around that. But that feels like that's an early point that could be addressed, right? So anyway, okay, let's lighten the mood with my non-racially charged 10 rapid-fire questions. If you are ready, Justin, we shall begin.
Yeah, let's go. Let's do this.
Good stuff. No penalties, mate, no penalties.
My goodness.
Question number one, bull or bear?
Bull.
Question two, Bogle or Buffett?
Oh, it's got to be Buffett, I think.
Question three, profit or planet?
Planet. But it, no, well...
There's the but.
Yeah, there's so it's profit, but with a social conscience.
Okay. Question four, divest or engage?
Engage.
Question five, lower cost or better value?
It has to be better value, right? I mean, yeah, it has to be.
Question six. One of my favourites. Supertankers or boutiques?
Oh, well, it depends, doesn't it? It depends what you're looking for. So I always value when my analysts find these kind of these jewels that nobody else has found. So I always praise them more when they find managers at boutiques. So I'd probably go for boutiques, but I do recognise that super tankers clearly have their role, and the way we're going in the industry, we're going to see a lot more super tankers.
Well, on a similar vein, question seven: star managers or team players?
Yeah, I think it has to be team players. Although. I think it's really important that you do still invest in talent, and clearly that you are going to have people that are stronger than others. But you know, team from my perspective, the only way to really invest from a multi asset perspective, what I do is in a team process.
Sure. Question eight: public or private?
Ooh. In what sense?
Most people have interpreted that to be more about markets than perhaps personal life.
I'd say public.
Public. Question. Yeah. Question 9: high growth or stable income?
I think stable income, which is going to be bizarre given my age, but I think that people underestimate the power of compounding.
I agree, and of course, increasingly elusive at this day and age, particularly yes. given where inflation's heading right now. And question 10, definitely one of my favourites, socialism or free markets? And you can only pick one.
I can only pick one. Oh, this is difficult. So I think if I was asked from a allocation of capital perspective, I'd be free markets. But then from a personal perspective, I think you end up with lots of market failures when you follow a purely private model. So if you push me, I'd say private markets, but that wouldn't be the full answer.
So just to clarify, if you had to pick one, it would be free markets.
Free markets. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just leave that there. And that just leaves the bonus round. If you can choose a number between 11 and 40.
Let's go with my number, 20.
Oh, number 20 is still available. It is 1984 or 2001 AD. So it's a bit of a popular culture. It's basically Orwell or Judge Dredd.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, I see what you mean. I'd say 2001.
Yeah, you could have. Yeah. I suppose technically, you could have gone Kubrick with 2001 as well. 2001. There we go. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah, I remember 2001. I was 2 years old in 1984. So.
thanks very much, mate. And that marks the end of our interview. You have survived the new fund order, Justin. I just want to say thanks very much, mate, for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Great stuff, Justin. Thank you. Please don't forget to like and share and subscribe. You know, click the subscribe button. A new podcast every 2 weeks with a new guest. Stay tuned. A big thanks to you, dear listener, for tuning in. Brought to you by my sponsor, Allianz Global Investors. And a warm thanks to today's guest. Legally, I am compelled to remind everyone that all views of this podcast are, of course, independent and do not belong to any affiliation or organisation. Just in case that was in any doubt. Tune in for the next podcast every 2 weeks from
the New Fund Order.
Please subscribe, share, like and comment. Let me know what you think and what you'd like covered in future episodes. Until then, stay safe and keep it left field.
With our health, the competition should make us better. Not bitter. We must use the insight, wisdom, and experience of the late Hubert Humphrey as a balm for the wounds in our party, this nation, and the world. We must forgive each other, redeem each other, regroup, and move on. Our flag is red, white, and blue, but our nation is rainbow. Red, yellow, brown, black, and white. We're all precious in God's sight.